We knew it would be a decision at the time. You know, I would love for the docs and the medical team to say, yes, he is ready, full go, but he's not. And now you're talking about, even if you're ready to ramp him up soon, he hasn't played football in over a month. And there's a certain callus that you have to be. So it's like, all right, that takes a week or two. Now you're into week three or week four. You know what I mean? So you're trying to be smart. We obviously invest in him. We believe in him. And, you know, he's just taking it one day at a time.
Bills general manager Brandon Bean earlier this week on the status of Max Hairston. As we are 8 days away.
Just over a week. Just over a week.
Just over 1 week away.
It's crazy to be here.
It's great to be here.
Good crazy.
College football's back. The temperatures are cool for some reason in the last week of August.
I know. It just makes you want to grab the pigskin and start whipping it around, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
But it also is a great time to make sure we catch up with one of our friends of the program. A man that you've heard on this show plenty of times. I hope you've heard him on his own podcast, the Bruce Exclusive. We've got Bruce Nolan joining us here on the West Hurrah Hotline. Bruce, it's Derek and Joe, and it's been a minute. How you doing, my guy?
I am thrilled that football is back, and I'm thrilled that we got to this stage of football being back, like actually being back, with basically a boring offseason. You know, you're always worried when you have Hard Knocks in your building that there's going to be some sort of drama that gets embellished for the purposes of HBO. But there was really nothing to talk about, and boring is good. So I am on board with boring.
Even the drama that the Bills had, it had to do with James Cook, but he takes part in 8 practices first before he does a hold-in.
Mm-hmm.
And even then it turns into, okay, so you've been here, you've been to practice, now you're holding in. Wait, what do you mean they got a deal done? And it turned into a success. A contract negotiated. It's not the $15 million that Cook is asking for, but they find their middle ground for a couple of years on a deal to a point where it's a happy little medium for both player and team. And now Buffalo can just move on to, let's get to the regular season.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where it never reached a fever pitch, right? It never even got into the zip code of the situation that you saw in Dallas with Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons, where they're both going running to their own sources and running to their own media outlets to try to control the narrative. None of that stuff ever happened. And also, it was almost like there's part of the national media that kind of almost wanted it to happen. Like they want something to take the next step. They want something to go embellish. They want something that they can sink their teeth into. It just never really happened that way. And so I think the worst that it got, quote unquote, worst that it got was, oh, he's not practicing now all of a sudden after practicing before. And oh, he's suited up for this game, but he didn't end up playing in this game. And then, oops, there's a deal and we move on to the next thing. So I'm all about the boring. Even the thing that could have gotten not boring still ended up being boring. You say boring, I say peaceful. Tomato, tomato.
Exactly. I mean, they do sound different, but it is perfectly still the great point on that. Bruce, Bills, Ravens, obviously it is a big challenge to start the year, but I also want to start sending this message now, and that is, yeah, if the Bills don't win this game, it's not the worst thing in the world. Baltimore's a good team. Buffalo's a good team. It's going to be a shame when one of them has to lose this game.
People overreact to week one all the time. The Buffalo
Wait, what
Bills,
makes you think that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just week one lies to us all the time. And you could go back through the annals of the NFL in just the recent last couple of years and see some insane results week one. And that stuff happens all the time, in the good way, in the bad way. I mean, goodness gracious, we saw it with the Buffalo Bills, you know, just recently, you know, I'm feeling pretty old right now, beating the New England Patriots and then getting bookend that season by losing to the Patriots by that exact same score in the inverse. So we saw the Buffalo Bills come out hot and beat the defending Super Bowl champion Rams on the first week of the season. And then that didn't end up being the year. That was the year. Oh, man, we just beat the Super Bowl champions. Let's go. And that ended up not being the year. So we see these things all the time, that isn't going to stop anyone. Like, nothing that I just said is going to stop anyone who was going to overreact from overreacting, but it's just nice to get ahead of the concept now.
Bruce Nolan joining us here on the Wesher Hotline. Bruce, when it comes down to it, though, one of the things you want to try to avoid in the training camp and preseason is injuries. Throughout training camp, that list was a laundry list. It was a grocery list, maybe even, of names that was always on it. But now that we're here to the regular season, it does look like they're relatively healthy except for one spot, cornerback two, which was already one of the biggest question marks heading into the season. It's now a different question. Who the heck is going to play it against Baltimore? And it's not because of competition. It's because of health.
Yeah, it really is. It was one of those situations where Trey White was getting good reviews through the early part of training camp. Like, wow, look at how well stocked we are. And then all of a sudden, Hairston goes down, Trey White goes down. You're like, okay, well, maybe we're not as well stocked. But let's be honest, who is well stocked that can afford two shots at the exact same position moving forward? Nobody. Nobody's that well stocked. If we had two stocks at running back, we'd be like, okay, well, Ty Johnson is going to have to carry the load now. A little nervous about that, but okay. Every single spot in the league can't afford two blows like that. And so for us, you think to yourself, well, you have a veteran. You have Dane Jackson on the practice squad who you can call up if you need to. You have Dorian Strong there, who was a draft pick, who was well thought of. You know, if it's me and I'm running into week one and I don't have Hairston, I don't have Tre'Davious White, I do think there's a semblance of comfort that comes along with calling up Dane Jackson from the practice squad and having him take snaps there. I think that this team has already shown you that they are willing to platoon that spot as well. So don't leave off the table the idea that the person who gets the first snaps of the game might not necessarily get the last snaps of the game or even the second drive snaps of the game. We saw that just a couple of years ago where first round pick Kyer Elam comes out and starts the game and then is platooning with some guy, I don't know, sixth round pick Christian Benford. Who's this dude, right? He ends up being, of course, a stud, and now he's in the CB1 role. And then I think there's a potential platoon option at CB2. I would not be surprised if you saw Dane Jackson get the practice squad call up because of his familiarity with the defense. And I also wouldn't be surprised if you see a platoon there.
Bruce, sticking with the defense, the big question mark has pretty much been, what can we expect from the Bills' defensive line with all the young additions they made throughout the draft and just additions in general, like Joey Bosa throughout the offseason? What do you make of them, and how successful can you, I guess, expect them to be from what we've seen in the preseason, especially TJ Sanders, Deion Walker really starting to make some splashes? We didn't see too much, but what do you think?
I sure hope this is the combination. We have seen multiple combinations. Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have consistently churned this defensive line over and over and over again during their tenures here to try and find the right formula to get that pass rush going, and they hope that they found it. However, it's important to note that just like the conversation I had about week one, the best time to have your pass rush humming is at the end of the season and in the playoffs, which is where they historically have let the team down, not necessarily week one. But I think we're going to get a nice taste of it. I think I wish that Michael Hoyt was around for the first game, because I think that we saw some flashes from him in the preseason that makes you think that he could potentially be a good piece for this defense as well. I think that on paper, it's the best defensive line they've had since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean started fiddling with it. But I think that this is also an interesting game to test that, because the way that you play Lamar Jackson is different than the way you play a lot of quarterbacks. So even if that defensive line is going to be the version that we want it to be, I don't know if you're necessarily going to see it week one, because you're going to be asking your ends specifically to do different things against Lamar Jackson than you would historically against other passers in the league.
Bruce, when it comes down to it, though, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And the Bills are once again favored. They are once again this team that is expected to run away with the East. And they're expected to once again be another Super Bowl contender. I do also know that there are some people that they'll have a problem grasping the enjoyment of the regular season and the path that will be there because of the fact that they are a title contender that has yet to break through. You are a man of wisdom and a man that I can ask these unconventional questions to and ask for advice for for fans that might be struggling with this of just get me to January, just get me to January. What do you say to the people that, you know, like they're in that rush, they're in that I don't care about the regular season. How do you get them to enjoy the ride?
I think what happens is we create a binary for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is that I can be good in the regular season, but it doesn't matter because I need to be good in the playoffs. So my options are be good in the regular season, bad in the playoffs, or good in the regular season, good in the playoffs. And so they look at one side of the coin and they say, well, I want the other side of the coin. I want you be good in the regular season and good in the playoffs. So I want the thing that is the opposite in my mind of what I have. But that's not the opposite of where we're at right now. The opposite of where we're at now is bad all the time. That's the opposite of where we're at now. So I understand for sure that you want to take that next step and you want this team to be good in the playoffs and you want them to make that run. You want them to make that Super Bowl appearance that you feel like they've been just outside of reach on for the longest time. But that's not the alternative, and it's certainly not the only alternative to the situation you're in now. The alternative to the situation you're in now, we've been in for a long time, which was we were in the drought. Now, I'm not saying that you should not expect more from this team because it could be worse. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there are many, many different outcomes to a season, not just good in the regular season, bad in the playoffs versus good in the regular season, good in the playoffs. There are a lot of outcomes that every team across the league is looking at, and being good in the regular season is the first path to a positive outcome. So let's check the box, but let's focus on the box we're at. And the box we're at is the regular season. We'll deal with that when we get there.
Bruce, just looking in general, kind of at the national media perspective of the team this year versus last year, it's completely different, the complete opposite side of the spectrum. And just kind of, I guess, going off of that, what do you make of the national expectations? Is it going to be, oh, the Bills drop a game and it's do or die, Super Bowl or bust, and they're not going to make it? How do you get through that, and what would your advice be to fans to kind of block out the noise and kind of keep it centered on the team?
I think one of the reasons why, to answer my last question, one of the reasons why that answer was that answer is because that is reinforced by the way the national media. No matter what the Bills do in the regular season, it's going to be, well, yeah, but they can't get over the hump of the playoffs. So it doesn't really matter. Like, if the Buffalo Bills lose to the Ravens, it's, oh, did they get jumped? If they beat the Ravens, it's going to be, oh, okay, you know, is this the year or not? Are they going to fall short in the playoffs? It doesn't matter, right? So the national media is waiting around till the playoffs to decide one way or another anyway. But that doesn't mean we have to. Like, we don't have to follow that path. We can just enjoy the ride and enjoy the games that we're playing now and enjoy being a really good team. And that's fine. Like, we can do that. That's completely okay. But I think that one of the reasons why a lot of fans are like that is because that's the way the national media looks at the team. And that's okay. Like, we're all right with that. They have 32 teams to cover. They can't invest themselves fully into one the way that some of us can. And I get that. But just because they're saying that doesn't mean we have to say that.
Bruce, now shifting our focus here. I mean, I was thinking about asking a question about the wide receiver room, but you know what? Maybe we can take a break from that. But looking around the rest of the league, you mentioned it in passing about how the Bills were drama-free, and then there was the Micah Parsons thing. What do you feel about one of the most insane sagas that got put into turbo speed within a month's time?
I cannot believe that Jerry Jones took that return for Micah Parsons. I just can't. And I think that overall, the return for Micah Parsons being less than the return for Khalil Mack is astounding to me, in my opinion. I can't fathom that. Like, if you would have told me two firsts, 2 seconds, Kenny Clark and a sixth, okay, you know, we'll talk. But it's crazy to me. Micah Parsons is, from a pressures and sacks standpoint, on a torrid pace that is, without hyperbole, historic. And the idea that he is, let's be honest, we all knew the back injury was hooey, right? It's oh, my back hurts from carrying this lack of money on my back. And sure enough, there he goes to Green Bay, and his back is fine, and he's got to ramp up and play. But ultimately, if you look at the returns that teams historically get for those things, everyone wants to talk about Herschel Walker, and that's great. That's the great, oh, man, I'm going to trade Herschel Walker. First off, the team got less than the Herschel Walker trade. Also, most of those trades don't work out. Go back to the Cleo Mack trade. Go back to all of the big trades that involve multiple first-round picks, and every single time you're just hoping one of those firsts turns out to be the guy you traded away. But that's not the case. In most cases, you look back and go, oh, well, we didn't really make good use for what those assets became. And I anticipate this to likely be the same, that you're just hoping that you can recreate the production that you lost for Micah Parsons. But fact of the matter is, they had an option to not do this. The Cowboys consistently have the option to not go through this. All they got to do is sign their players early, and they never, ever do it. So because they decide to wait until the last minute, till the market's insane, take stances like this, have their owner be their GM, decide they're going to go on a public tour and continue to embarrass themselves, this is just the way it works. And so I know a lot of Cowboys fans who are just kind of irritated at the whole thing, and they have a right to be. It's a proud franchise with a meaningful history, and they've got a situation like this that's going to continue to be the case until there's different leadership.
Bruce, you mentioned the trading away the best player sort of thing, and like the helicopter sounds are in my head as a Sabres supporter. Very rarely do you get away with trading the best player in a deal, and I'm like, oh, wait, that's the Sabres. Great. So thanks for helping my brain activate that sadness in my head, but you know what? That's not your fault. It's mine. It's my brain, my problems. But again, like, you're right. They always do leave it to the last minute, and the Parsons thing is a one-of-one situation that Jerry Jones turned into, oh, it's about the agent. I don't know what's going on here, but okay, buddy, I'm not believing you. But you're right. They do also typically cost themselves more money by not getting things done sooner, in particular with Prescott and Lamb, these last two, and then now with Parsons, where it just became this, I don't know what to call it. Maybe probably not radio safe terms.
Yeah, it's a situation where I think that Jerry Jones has made his stance clear on that, where he said he's defended the idea that they wait. It's not a situation where, well, we talked 3 summers ago and we talked 2 summers ago and we just couldn't do it. No. They are specifically waiting because he's like, well, I mean, they could get hurt. Who knows? Like, that's his stance. And so, yeah, they could also get hurt 5 seconds after they signed the contract you signed at the last minute, which now costs you more money than it did previously. So them getting hurt has a more significant negative impact on your team if you wait. So, like, he's already stated the logic. The logic doesn't make sense. It doesn't hold up. And also, importantly, we have examples of great organizations who don't do that. Like, the fact that arguably the best organization from a management standpoint and the best GM in the league is in your division right now. Howie Roseman is giving you an example of how to go about running your team, and you're still like, nah, I know better. I know better. I'm going to do the exact opposite of what the best GM in the league is doing. I mean, I don't know how else to say that aside from it's just deliberate organizational arrogance, but because of the structure of the organization, no one can be held accountable because the owner's the GM.
Yeah, Bruce, it is pretty just unbelievable to look at, and I feel like it's always something. The CeeDee Lamb last year, just the negotiations with that team, and the Bengals are approaching a similar conversation with how they deal with their players, but they're not close to how Jerry Jones specifically does things. I do want to look at a different team, though, if that's okay. The Miami Dolphins, just in the division, right? They're not being spoken about with a positive drop of anything. The Patriots have more positivity behind them. The Jets even do, with Justin Fields. It seems like the Dolphins are just kind of getting thrown out the window, and Tua's time's over, Mike McDaniel's time's over. What do you make of that team, and are they really just kind of toiling away?
Yeah, the vibes are bad with the Dolphins right now. It's bad vibes. I think a lot of it is result of their defensive backfield and their cornerbacks. They have, you know, two people. I mean, there's an argument that late summer free agent signings are going to be both of their starters at cornerback for the Miami Dolphins. And I think one of the things is that they said, hey, we want to be a more physical team. We don't want to be soft anymore. And their solution to that was to spend a 6th-round pick on Ollie Gordon. And so it starts with the offensive line, but that that philosophy from an offensive standpoint has never relied upon having a strong offensive line. And so if you want to stop being a team who gets bullied, if you want to stop being soft, then the way you deal with that is you bring in an Aaron Cromer and you invest in your offensive line, right? That's what you do. And the Miami Dolphins didn't do that. And so it's kind of this weird where we're all just sort of waiting around for everyone to get fired with the Miami Dolphins, because I don't think I've been one of Tua Tagovailoa's most ardent defenders. I think he's a good quarterback, but this offensive system, I think, has kind of run its course a little bit, and they don't have the personnel to really pivot and decide, hey, we're going to be a tough football team. We're going to be a power running football team. I will say this. I think there's an opportunity for their pass rush to be meaningful. I think Chop Robinson, everybody was up in arms about a first round pass rusher who didn't have sacks, you know, but Chop Robinson's turned into a really good player. They've got two back from injury and Jalen Phillips. And I think that I really feel like that pass rush has a shot to be good, and it had better be, or they might be in trouble.
Bruce, would you have the Bills signing Jabril Peppers?
I'd have the Bills looking at everybody on the safety side. I don't think that there's any situation that the Buffalo Bills are in right now where they have the authority to sit back at their team and go, yeah, on the defensive backfield side, I think we have everything we need. Like, I just don't think that's a reasonable stance to take. I will say this. I do think Peppers is a little bit redundant with Bishop and Rapp. It was one of the conversations that we talked about when the Bills drafted Taylor Rapp was, when they drafted Cole Bishop was, yeah, I like Cole Bishop. Skill set seems kind of redundant with Rapp. I think you're kind of tripling down on that same skill set with Jabril Peppers. And so I get it, and I'd kick the tires on it, but Peppers is when he was with the Browns and Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator, and the running joke, the meme, right, was that you played Jabril Peppers 25 yards off the line of scrimmage, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, this is not what Jabril Peppers does. And also, what? Right? That's kind of the same thing you feel when you see Cole Bishop playing deep, and you're like, well, he's better the closer he gets to the line of scrimmage. But also, I think Rapp's better the closer you get to the line of scrimmage. And I think Peppers is better the closer you get to the line of scrimmage. And so I would be interested to kick tires, sure, but I do think the skill set can be a little redundant.
Bruce, last one for you here. It just feels right that the weather is chilling a little bit here as college football is about to get underway. What are you maxing and relaxing with the first college football weekend here with Ohio State and Texas about to start at noon and plenty more to go around from here?
Absolutely. I am literally en route right now to a place with my wife. She's sitting in the passenger seat next to me where we can watch the Ohio State Texas game. I've got my gear on. We're going to be enjoying it. And it's beautiful. The weather is lovely and I'm ready. I'm ready for real football. I make the joke that says football is back all the time, but football is actually back now. Real football that counts and matters is going to be on my television here shortly. And I'm excited about it.
Yes. It's not the Hall of Fame game.
That became an entire bit. I got that one to go off the rails. But that is the first football we all get to watch. It's not wrong. Bruce, appreciate you always. And do you have a pick for Ohio State, Texas here?
I mean, I think that it would be more embarrassing for Texas to lose than it would be for Ohio State. Texas has the hype. Texas is the number one team. Texas has Arch Manning. He has all the hype behind him. I do think that if I was an unbiased observer, which I historically am, I'd take Texas in this game. And I also think it means more to Texas if they lose than it does to Ohio State. That's my situation. We'll see. I mean, I'm going to be rooting for my team, and we're going to be hoping that Julian Saiyan goes Super Saiyan, because the Dragon Ball Z memes are going to be so strong with this guy, and I am here for it. I need him to be good just from meme potential. And so for me, let's go. But if I didn't have a rooting interest, I'd probably take Texas.
All right, there it is. I'll give you Zach Jones's number. Be able to smack talk him. So there we go.
Sounds good.
Bruce, always appreciate you. You know the last part of this. Let the people know where to hear your work.
If you'd like to hear more of my work, I use the word work very, very loosely in this case. You can find my podcast, The Bruce Exclusive, drops every Thursday. You can go into wherever you find your podcasts. type in the Bruce exclusive every Thursday morning. Be there or, you know, don't be, whatever.
You can always catch up on it. That's the beauty of podcasts.
Absolutely.
Bruce, always appreciate the time. Let's have some fun. And football is indeed, finally, at long last, back.
Football's back. Gentlemen, have a wonderful day.
Bruce, thank you.
Thank you, Bruce.
And we'll talk soon.
See ya.
That's Bruce Nolan there on the Westshore Hotline. Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
Cusco. Can't wait.
The poison for Cusco.
It's a time. I'm sitting here actually getting excited now, seeing like the college game day broadcast like ticking down within 10 minutes. It is something pretty remarkable.
Ready to go.
Yeah. You're going to get live score updates today because we're going to be glued to it while we're talking.
It's monumental. And the biggest game of the day clearly getting started here at noon.
It's the first one. How could you not love that?
Yep.
It's right off the bat. You get the best action.
You set the tone.
Yes.
For the whole country.
Yes.
And you get to see Arch Manning. And you set the tone for the college season.
Yeah. Hopefully it's a barn burner.
I'm clearly talking about Ball State and Purdue.
Yeah. What are you talking about? Texas.
Yeah. What is this?
Purdue. The Boilermakers. That's all we're going to talk about today. Flip to like ESPN 11 to find the Purdue.
Live score updates about Ball State and Purdue today, even though we're nowhere near Indiana.
Nope.
Obviously, all kidding aside, it's awesome to have the first weekend of college football back. And, yeah, we'll be giving you some score updates as it goes. We're probably going to even react to some plays because we'll be watching it. It's on the televisions here, in the producer room, in our studio, out in the newsroom. We got it everywhere. College football is plastered everywhere. It's just one of those weekends that it just feels right.
Mm-hmm.
And then next week, we're talking about the first Thursday game and Friday game of the season. We're actually going to be recapping two games.
Mm-hmm. And then we preview.
That involve both Super Bowl participants.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's not crazy. That's actually called marketing.
Well, yeah, but like it's kind of crazy. There's a Friday game.
There is a Friday game. They squeeze in the other Super Bowl participant.
Yeah.
And now we get to talk about that. And that's going to set the tone. And that's going to be what we'll be talking about next week. But this week, it is all about what's going to happen. It's the last chance we get to call shots. It's the last chance we're going to be able to take those shots. And we'll do that in the next hour. But coming up next, we're breaking early because we got to get to the booty cheek of the week. And the Dallas Cowboys have clearly decided they want to stick around here for a second week in a row. Because even when we weren't here, Target was on their back.
Oh, yeah.